3, 2, 1, and here we are. This is the best of all possible worlds right here. We are doing a Zoom recording. We are live streaming it, and I've got my two favorite Star Trek curmudgeons here. Jesus, I'm so happy. It took the combined poor.
I wonder who your less favorite curmudgeons are. They must be pretty rough.
Well, they're not on the show. They're never on the show. So,
yeah.
All right. So I'm Mike McCaffrey. This is, I just want to talk about Star Trek episode 201. You guys, can you believe that? When was the last time you guys were on? Do you remember?
I don't know. Five. How many years have you been doing it? I think we did it the first year you did it, like a couple of times.
It was.
Yeah. I think it's been 5 years at least. I really do. It's been 4 or 5 years.
Well, there was one where I went to your, so I'm talking with Ryan Nagata and George Edelman, friends of the pod, lifelong Trekkers, lifelong Trek haters of bad Trek. So that's where we're here. We're here to not to praise Picard, but to bury him. But I came to your office, Ryan. Are you in your office right now? Or your workshop?
I'm in the new one, yeah. You've never been to this one. Actually, okay. So you went to the Inglewood one.
Yeah.
When George was still there.
Yeah.
And then I moved to this studio 2 years ago, right before the pandemic. And this one is actually behind my house, so it's pretty convenient.
Wait, is it like literally in your backyard, or is it just like,
you know? Yeah, well, it's an ADU in the backyard. Yeah. It's behind my grandmother's old house.
Oh, so wow. Okay.
It's not his garage, but it's sort of like, it's like a separate structure on his property.
Yeah. It looks kind of like a garage.
Have it's I seen cool. that? Is that
no,
new?
You haven't.
Okay.
Actually, I'm going to take this helmet off now.
Yeah, so if you listen to the podcast, Ryan is wearing an authentic replica of the Tholian Web helmet. Or this, what is it called? What's the official?
I don't think it has an official name. It's just a Star Trek spacesuit. It's the only spacesuit they ever wore in the original series.
And you built the helmet for the rest of the costume, right?
I built the whole costume twice. I did it once for that Cali Fontecchio art show.
Right.
And then I did that was the one where Rene Aubergenois came and I won the contest. But then I did a second version that was more accurate for the convention. I don't remember what year. It was like 2000. But
then didn't you get drafted by people to help restore the original? That's the cool part of the story.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
So after that, there was a company. I know the guy, the owner of this company. They do a lot of restorations of old props and costumes and stuff. And some guy bought Kirk's or Shatner's costume from the original series at an auction. But it didn't have the helmet anymore. So I just made like a replacement helmet and gloves for that costume. And now it's displayed at some guy's house with the helmet on it.
He paid like $150,000 for that or something. It's like a huge amount, didn't he? Like what was?
I have no idea. I don't, actually I did meet the guy at STLV. And
Ted
he came
Cruz,
up to me and said,
right? No. Star Trek super fan.
he came up to me and said, I'm the guy that bought the Kirk suit and I really love what you did with it. And so, yeah, I did meet that guy. But I don't know how much I'm assuming it was a lot of money.
I thought it was like 150,000 or some weird like astronomical number. And so, like to get like half a suit for that, you know, like not get the helmet. Well, here's like a, yeah. Here's like a suit with no.
Oh, it was screen worn. I mean, for it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yes, it's insane. But I think for a rich person, it's reasonable. Like for a crazy rich person, like it would be like, why not? It's the actual suit, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I guess if you have tons of money and you don't know what to do with the money and you're a Star Trek fan, then that's the kind of stuff you buy. But I remember when I was researching that costume, I also sort
it was
of
me. Looked, what if I pulled the suit?
And you were that guy who came up to me and you had a rubber mask.
That's why I'm so defensive of his spending habits. I'm like, it's not that crazy.
Wow, George, guys, you're really leaning into this. What's the deal here, man?
What's at stake?
George's eyes are welling up with tears. He's like, this moment here.
The camera tilts a little and it's behind me.
Your son pulls it out. Danny, like, no, no.
Yeah, I looked into the various costumes from that episode and what happened to all of them. And I think the most complete one was McCoy's suit that also went up for auction years ago. And then the Kirk one, I think that was the, so there's like an episode of Mork and Mindy where somebody is wearing like, it's clearly that red like shower curtain outfit from
Naked
the
Time. Early
that first yeah Naked Time yeah. And it has the helmet from Tholey and Webb on that, and I think that was Kirk's helmet and it somehow got lost because they just used I just went into the prop warehouse.
Just the guy looked in the prop house and was like, what's this dumb thing?
Yeah.
This guy, this is funny. Let's do this.
It's so depressing. I mean, I've been into a couple of prop like places like Nickelodeon's, and there's just all these crazy things. And to think like somewhere there's like history, you know, that like is being like repurposed and thrown away. And like
but someone like, will spend $150,000 at least on like that's yeah. There's a lot of those kinds of things.
Well, you saw like Trelane's jacket, like was used in the Monkees and I think maybe a Mork and Mindy or something else, like a Fantasy Island or something. Like for sure was in the Monkees, like Trelane's like blue, like naval jacket.
Was it, it was probably used for, it was just kind of like a Navy, kind of like a British Navy kind of, was it that kind of thing?
Yeah, it was just like, oh yeah, it was like a standard British Navy, you know, jacket, but like to see it, and then like, oh, that's actually Trelane's, you know, from that. Oh. And then it showed up like in a Fantasy Island or some weird thing. You're like, oh man.
Yeah,
save that stuff, you know. But see, now everyone just like hoards all this stuff. They just hoard it. Like when I did the Invisible Man, I took a bunch of props. I'm like, no, I'm taking this shit. I still
have you sold any of it on eBay yet?
No, who's gonna buy it? Oh. Right? I mean, you know,
there's super fans out there.
I have my outfit from the Invisible Man. I have my Ebert suit. It's still hanging up in a closet somewhere, probably like threadbare. But I was like, I'm keeping this. Why would I, you know, why would you give it away? You know, now it's like the thing. It's like everyone knows you've got to keep your stuff. So.
Oh, yeah. In the old days, they used to recycle sci-fi props between like all the Forbidden Planet stuff shows up in like a million other movies afterwards.
I remember seeing the robot from Forbidden Planet in an episode. Just take it off. Sorry. seeing a robot in Forbidden Planet in an episode of Columbo directed by Steven Spielberg.
Columbo.
Maybe Lost in might Spirit. Not have been the one he directed actually, but I do remember seeing it when I was watching Columbo and I was like, that's just ridiculous. That, like, it just seems so hilarious that like this class, it would be like seeing the Rosebud sled and like, you know, who's the boss or something. I don't know. It's just so weird. Like it seems bizarre, but yeah, that's how the studios work.
But that one especially, because I saw that in Lost in Space like at least twice as two different robots. That one was such a high, like such a high functioning
iconic visual. Yeah.
That if you like, had you that,
it's like, double yeah, like, that one is something else. You like, just
you're damn straight we're gonna use that thing. I don't care what we're using. I mean, you know, it's gonna be in it. So, well, it's the classic, you know, start whatever that thing is with the little neon red things that. You know what I'm talking about, Ryan, the prop that every single episode of.
So that was so there's this place called Modern Props. I think it was in Culver City or something. And it was just a guy who started this prop house and he just made a lot of generic futuristic things. And he used to rent them out to everything, including Star Trek, The Next Generation. And so that thing with like the red tubes shows up in all kinds of things in the 80s.
Yeah.
He also made the Ghostbusters PKE meter. And that was also like a generic like sci-fi tool or what. It wasn't made for Ghostbusters. So it shows up in some other movies in the 80s. If you like,
Wow. You know, I tried to watch Ghostbusters Afterlife. Have you guys seen that yet?
Yeah.
I was flying to or from Chicago for 5 hours. And I'm like, oh, let's give it a try. About 25 to 30 minutes. I'm like, I do not know what the hell's going on in here. It was out. It was bad. But they had that. They had a little PKE meter in it. It's like, yeah. It was like, ooh, look at this. I know. It was.
Well, now it's associated with Ghostbusters. I think that was the most iconic. Obviously, it was the most iconic use of that prop. But yeah, there's a
What's
lot of stuff.
What's your favorite prop from Picard, Mike?
I can answer that. I absolutely
I'm
know.
Segueing.
George, keep it up. See, George, as a fellow podcaster for Noah Film School with a much larger listening base in this place right now.
But you know how but to also but yeah, but it's yes. But I wish I was just talking about Star Trek on every podcast episode. No. That would be awesome.
My answer, because I don't have a slide for this, is of course. The Ellurians, the Ellurians magic genie bottle, which when you open summons the Q.
Yeah.
Mm.
Okay.
Do you remember that?
Is that yours, Ryan? What was yours?
I didn't have a favorite. I kind of liked that they brought back the tricorder. Cause you remember in season one, they were kind of trying to hint at the fact that they don't use tricorders anymore.
Oh, okay.
They said, like, she's, I think the Dr. Girardi says, this is like an old fashioned tricorder or something.
Yeah.
And nowadays everything is incorporated into the ship. But then in season two, they have that black tricorder that they're carrying around. I mean,
oh, do we have a slide of that, Mike?
We do not. No, no, you invoked the name Girardi, and I immediately had like this visceral reaction, like, oh, Jesus. You know, really have to talk about this.
I wanted to laugh because that's I just googled black tricorder Picard. I just want to get a look at it.
Be careful. That's
it. Oh, okay. That's kind of cool. I mean, I agree with you.
I don't like it. There's nothing I like about it. It's the only prop that's memorable to me.
Yeah, it looks kind of like a smartphone. It's not, it's just, I think what's cool is that they went back to having a physical thing, because I agree. When in this first season, when they mentioned that, I had like a massive, like, ugh. Like, it was like, why do you want to get rid of cool stuff? Like, what would be the point? Like, you know, I asked the prop question, not just as a segue, but because I feel like there are no identifiable, like, prop design elements truly from the show, from what I saw, which I think is one of its many failures, because I think science fiction and fantasy, those kinds of things, it's kind of upon you to create a visual like signature or world that comes across through props and design, and they just failed, I think, in every way to do that. Like, it has no, I mean, like me and Ryan talked about it a couple times. We were like, oh, there's actually like a uniform, like they showed an updated uniform. That's kind of nice. Because we want to know, what do they wear at this point in time? Like, instead of just Picard in like his khakis at home and a sweater. Yeah. Like, you couldn't, in my opinion, that's like the worst. Like, even in some of the older Star Treks when I'm sorry, I'm ranting. But like, when you would see like Kirk, the three of us talked about this on the podcast before, years ago. But like, when they would show them in like Star Trek 3 and you'd see them in their home, their regular clothes, it still had design. Like, it was dated in 80s, but it still was designed to be like, let's imagine what these guys were wearing on their off days. And with Picard, it was like, you know, a guy from like a Viagra commercial. It was just like, ugh.
I think, so Picard, I noticed in the series, always has a jacket that has some sort of yoke type design on it to evoke, I think, the old uniforms.
Yes.
You know, the shoulders. He wears a jacket with gray shoulders. It's supposed to make you think of the old uniform. And it kind of reminded me of Kirk in Star Trek 4 when he wears that fan outfit. But it's got a maroon jacket. So it's
that's true. Yeah.
It's trying to make you think that it's a uniform. But I never liked those things. And I didn't like it in Picard. And I didn't. Yeah.
Well, if that's the only thing you didn't like in Picard, Ryan, then we have done it. We have successfully defended the show and its honor. I think that is the least egregious thing I have with that show. Now, did you guys hear, or maybe you saw, like, me and my friend John Stern.
I want to share a screen and just pull up images that make me laugh because they're so dumb, but I'm not going to do that because I'm just looking at dumb images from this show right now.
I've got several of those.
That looks stupid. We'll
get those in a minute here, I promise. but I went to the pop-up bar for 10 forward, whatever it was.
I remember hearing about that.
Yes. Yeah. It was actually like pretty cool. Like for $25, you got like two drinks and unlimited food for like 90 minutes. Plus you get to walk around with like weirdos in costumes who didn't quite know what they were doing. Like there was a dude who was like dressed as an Orion, but he had no idea what the hell he was doing. You know, he was like, human, what are you doing here? I don't understand. Like, I don't think Orions talk like that, you know? And then there was like a Romulan girl who was just like stare at you. It's like, well, human, I don't know what to make of you. Like, okay. You know, it's like, well, are you with
these were actors?
Like, yeah, they're actors.
They had two actors. Okay.
They had two actors walking around. But my point was is that when we were there, the costume makers and the sound crew were like having their rap party there.
Mm.
Did I tell you that, Ryan, or maybe not? So
I think I saw maybe on your on the Facebook page.
Right. And the little patch they gave me. The guy's like, hey.
Yeah.
He's like, hey.
So was that downtown?
Yeah, it was downtown. It was like, yeah, right down by where
on Forward Avenue or whatever.
I think so. It was like Forward Avenue or something. Yeah, something like, yeah. I think it did say Forward Avenue, like as you walked over.
Mike, have you done stuff like, have you been to Disneyland with their Star Wars stuff?
No.
Like their bar and stuff? Okay. No. I was going to say, like, how does something like that compare to when, like, Disney does it? And, like, you know, I'm sure not favorably, but I am curious if they capture the same feeling.
Well, all they did is they took the bar set and they moved it in this empty warehouse. Like literally, I kept on like, cause like the Orion guy was like supposed to be in Orion's slave trade. I was like, okay, so where are your slaves? He's like, well, we will go upstairs and we'll discuss this later. And like, there was like an upstairs, like, I'm like, great. And so like, I like go over like the velvet rope and I start walking upstairs and it's just a set. And I'm like, holy shit. Like I'm going to fall down because there's like, it just drops off. And like, he didn't think through that. He didn't think through that I was going to do that. And so then he was like totally like flummoxed by that, but it was they just like threw two actors out there and said, hey, or watch a couple episodes of Star Trek and I think you're good. Don't worry about it. No Star Trek fan is ever going to quiz you about this stuff
or come to this thing. Like what?
it was actually not super attended. It was kind of like sparsely attended, but there were like three. They had like. The food was good and they brought it right out. They had a food truck. I mean, it was unlimited. I ordered like 8 plates of food at like little like tacos. Cause I was like, let's see how far we can go with this. So I, you know, in 90 minutes, we just had plates everywhere.
Which 10 forward was it? Next Generation? The original?
No, it was Guinan's 2024 like regular bar location.
Oh, okay.
I think it was the actual set. I think they just like transported the set.
Okay. Yeah. That's not that cool because it was just, it just looked like a bar.
Like a bar. It's like,
yeah, that's not cool. I thought it was 10 forward.
That's what it should have been. Right. But instead it's just like, a bad Cheers iteration.
But
it's
I
like,
missed something. Yeah. No, yeah. No. Okay.
But that's where,
I didn't miss anything.
That's where I think I read in the comments, you had said the costume person had said, oh, it was wonderful to work with Gates and LeVar again. And this was before the announcement. And then she slipped and then changed the subject.
And then someone like a dart like hit her neck out of nowhere and she passed out.
She was hammered. She was pretty tipsy. And she was the dyer. She dyed all, she's like, oh, I dyed Whoopi Goldberg's outfit. I was like, oh, that's great. And then she's like, yeah, like, oh man, you know, Jonathan Frakes is great. And you know, they were all great. And I was like, oh, you know, and Gates McFadden, yeah, she was great too. And you know, the bar. And then she's like,
did you ask them about what their costumes are going to be like in the next season? Because I want to know if they're wearing uniforms and all that stuff.
Oh, I have one too here.
Hi, Penny.
Theodore showed up too.
Yeah, Theodore popped in for a second.
Oh, yeah.
Mike, these are children who've been forced to go to conventions and wear costumes since they were like, well, you remember, you were there. They were like one.
I was there. I was there. Penny was there. Are you kidding?
Yeah. Penny and Theodore both went to the
convention. Theodore was there too. We went this past year. You guys didn't go, but me and Kiernan was so adamant about going.
Did he have fun?
He had a great time. How old is he? He's 18.
25?
18?
He's 18.
So is he graduating from high school this year?
Yes.
He's 18. Wow. Wasn't that far off.
Wow.
All right. Well, let's get back to
I do think that's inspiring though, Mike, because I remember for a long time in the old days, you used to talk about how he was just not in, the kids weren't into it and you tried. And my kids, I can tell they're like curious, but Star Trek's hard to get into when you're little. I mean, I was into it when I was little because I'm a weirdo, but I think when you're really little, it's hard.
You can go watch.
Well, I never pushed. And then we started watching the Orville, oddly enough, because it was like, oh, it's on like Fox on a Sunday. Let's watch it. And he got into a couple of them. He loved Doctor Who. And then from there, he's like, Dad, are there anything like Star Trek like this? I'm like, they're all like this, buddy. This is where it came from. And so now he's, you know, a big fan, although he couldn't get the Picard either. He tapped out.
Well, nobody can. We tried. Ryan forced himself somehow, but I think he regrets it. And I'm close to getting through. But I showed my older son the first episode of Strange New Worlds, and it did get him sort of thinking like, oh, you know, maybe I might like want to know more and go back. And we've watched some Next Generation too. He's intrigued, but anyway.
The pacing on those Next Gens are a little slow now.
It's a little so cerebral too.
Yeah.
Like,
wow, we were really smart, George. We liked stuff as kids.
We liked it when we were seven.
Smart people.
And eight.
Kids nowadays are dumb.
Well,
yes,
that was the only thing, right? Like it was Star Trek, Next Generation, or nothing, right? It's like, well, you know, I guess I'll go back to watch Transformers again. I mean, you know, it's like that's still on. So, all right. So let me keep us back on task here. I'm going to show some frames here from Picard. We're just going to talk about them. They're out of order. We're just going to dive into this because I think the whole show is out of order. I just screen grabbed these. I don't care. We're just going to own this. All right. Can you guys see that? Let's see. Where'd that go?
I can see something.
What do you, let's see. Here, I'll do it.
I see the silhouette of what's her name? And Picard. Oh,
What is her name?
It's I think that her name was Laris, right? The first season, and then
that's right. This is Laris, right? This is,
and then I don't know what her second name was.
I think it's Tahini because I look. There's like a slide I have.
Tahini.
It's a little bit of Tahini. How many characters are doubled up in this show is off the charts. There are so many Soongs and Datas, and there's so many of this woman, and then Issa Brones as whatever her name was, Sonji, and then
oh right, I forgot about her at the beginning being multiple.
I have a theory about why they did that. I don't know if maybe you
just
have
to
more
pay
insight.
Less actors cheap.
Well, no, I think they try. I think the second season was not meant to be like that. I think whatever. Maybe they were going to try and do some kind of continuation. And I think maybe for budget reasons, they did a show that just takes place in LA. It's kind of like, and then they, in order to use the same actors, they kind of just did this I don't know, like what American Horror Story does with the, with an ensemble cast, and they just made new characters. But, because I do have a theory about the third season and that Soong character. I might as well just say it. What the hell? I think that Soong character from the first season is lore. That's my theory. And I think in the third season, he will reveal himself to be lore. Because who is this human Soong brother of Data that we never heard of, who kind of seems a little evil? And was working with Maddox to make like an army or a community of synthetic. I mean, the guy, he acted a lot like Lore.
That could be Brent Spiner's limitation. We know he is quite limited, but I hope he's not listening. But I love you, Brent. I want him to be on the No Film School podcast one day, which is why. But the thing that's funny to me about what Ryan said in his theory is I have heard on good authority that they did have to cut way back for season 2.
Yeah.
Like I heard that early on in season 1 that it was like they blew through a lot of money on season 1 and they as a result season 2. I remember hearing this when it was in production. And it was like from someone in media and they were like you're going to be disappointed as a fan because they have to go to LA in the present day in season 2 because that's the only way they could afford to. It's like that is so sad. It's like that's the saddest thing I've ever heard. Like it,
yeah, you said that way before they revealed anything, so I definitely yes. think that's true.
Yes,
whoever told you that was yeah, a
budget I was dubious because you know you hear things and you're like, well, you take it with a grain of salt, but the fact that it exactly turned out that way is an indicator that it was true.
Yeah.
Well, let me circle back to Ryan's supposition that they had the foresight to bury the character of Lore for like a season, like that they actually knew what they were doing.
Well, I think it was probably the reason I said that was it was probably supposed to be the next season that he was revealed to be Lore, but now there's this odd season long gap.
This should have been like 3 episodes long. This season, like, because you go to LA for like 2 episodes and then you're good. You don't go for 8 episodes, right? Like, because like we had kind of gone through all the iterations of everything you can do. And I mean, we have ICE, we had like weirdo CIA agent. I mean, they did everything.
Do you guys remember like the one episode of Voyager where they go to Santa Monica and they're like on the pier? And it just reeks of like budget problem or the Sarah Silverman thing, right? Wasn't she?
Yeah.
It just reeks of like, we ran out of money this year, so we're going to do, or like Star Trek 4 being in like, well, what if it's 1980? What if it just happens to be 1984? Like the exact year we're making the movie. It's like, guys.
But like that, like those are okay because you're there for a while. Like, cause even the Voyager one, like that was like a two-parter. It's like, hey, we're like, you know, we're going to get like everyone gets some sunlight, right? Like everybody on Voyager, the whole cast, you've been doing 14 hours a day. We're going to get you out in some fresh air. We're going to put you on Santa Monica Pier for a little while. We're going to get you with a funny girl. It's going to be great. You know, but like this is, you're right. It is a budget saving thing for this Picard. This was just, I was so excited the first 2 episodes. Cause I think they had some extra budget. Cause the first 2 episodes were like, this is kind of okay. You know, they're kind of circling back to Picard, right? Like he has an actual want. He laments the fact he doesn't have a relationship with anyone. And oh, look, it's an alternate universe, which we're never going to see again. See you later. You know, we're going to be on Earth the whole time. And then we're stuck in LA.
Just like real life.
With people, yes, exactly. With people who look just like people from the 24th century, but who are different people. Like this woman, there's no way we don't need her to like be someone else. We like, that could be Laris. I'm fine with that. Yeah. Or like Gary, she should have just been like Gary Seven in the 24th and the 21st century, right?
You know, it's funny you say that because I felt even in the first episode of season 2 of Picard, even in the first scenes, I was like, this is not going to be good. Like I felt like I didn't enjoy the first season tremendously, but there were things I liked about it and I was willing to, I could watch it. But I just felt like there was this void. There was like, they're exploring this weird aspect of this backstory. And I think Ryan and I have talked about this a lot, but I feel like Patrick Stewart has lost his sense of how to play Picard or who that character is. I feel like he's playing some version of himself now. And it's more that than it is Picard. Cause like I said, I watched a couple of like vintage, like season 3, season 4 TNG episodes within the span when I would like switch back and see some Picard. And I was like, it's just not the same character. Like he's not, the whole performance is different. The whole, and I'm sure he would make an argument and they would, all the writers would talk about, well, he's changed a lot. And you know, he's, you know, 30 years older or whatever, but it's just feels completely impossible to connect him. The only time I ever felt he was a little bit connected was not really because of him, was because he was with Riker and Troy. Like, and that just being around them, it made me feel like, oh, I guess it could be the same guy. But when he's with all these other people, it's like, ah, it's just Patrick Stewart.
Copy that. I'll just stick with pizza.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with all of that. He does not have the, I've watched and I wonder, is it because he's trying to play like the gentle, like, elderly, maybe somewhat evolved Picard. He's not, you know, angry. Maybe he's left some of that anger behind. But I don't think he's capable of like mustering that gravitas anymore.
Yeah, because he has zero authority. There's zero authority behind him.
Because one bit in the beginning of season two where he's like the evil Picard on the recording. And he's also, his voice doesn't really have that same timbre that it used to. And he's trying to be like a, you know,
yeah,
an authoritative, mean version of Picard, and he can't do it. So I don't think he can do it anymore.
See, if you like the first season, that's fine. But I found him all over the map. He was so weak. I mean, I agree. I don't think he knows how to play himself.
I didn't like the first season. I tolerated it better. It was like eating. It was like my system didn't completely reject it the way I did the second season. I just could get it down. Like I could keep the food down.
it was like a weird buffet where every dish was like under a plate, and you're like, maybe this one's good, and it was bad. Every two episodes, like, no, this is bad too. Oh, I don't like it because they said, yeah, we didn't finish the season writing the season. We started filming before we finished writing. I was like, oh, really? Well, I couldn't tell that at all. Because I mean, like every two episodes, you're doing something completely different.
There was stuff, the scenes in the first season with the Romulan duo. And oh my God, that was torturous. I felt.
Oh yeah. I don't even remember any of that stuff.
I don't want to remind you. I don't want you to have to remember.
All right, so this clip right here, this is the end of the season. This is everything it's built up to. This is like him trying to find the ability to show affection, to fall in love with someone, with Laris, who he has loved for all his life. This is his love. Remember how much he loved Laris? And then, of course,
yeah, it comes up in Encounter at Farpoint, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a whole other thing. I won't get to it yet, but it's the systemic problem with this show that I've talked to George about before. But we'll get to it.
Well, Ryan, you spoke about that. Like, actually, another friend of John Stern said, like, are they afraid to have old people kiss? Because here, this should be the culmination.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I didn't want to see him kiss. I sensed it might be coming, and I was getting a little nervous and uncomfortable.
It almost happened in the first episode of season two, and I was like, oh no, come on. No.
But like if that's the central premise, you have some respect. To pay this off. You have to, like, I don't care if you pan back, because this, remember, like, this goes way far back. If you kiss like when they're just like two little like bits, you know, if they're like
through a microscope, like a telescope, like they're so far away.
Give me that, but we didn't
just
get
two
that.
Bodies.
Yes, just two bodies that are getting closer. But all they got is this. So this is like such a weird ending to the show. They couldn't even agree upon a kiss. So, all right. So that's this slide. All right. So here's Rafi. Let's talk about Rafi. Let's just come on, JL. Come on, RN and GE. Can I call you by your initials? Is that fun? You guys like that?
Yeah. This character embodies for me all the things that are wrong with Picard, just right from the word go, right from the start, which is writing into his life somebody. I'm taking things Ryan would probably say too, because we've talked about all of this no idea. But like,
you're
writing somebody into Picard's life that is meaningful to him, that we have no knowledge of, that has become this extremely important figure that has like this relationship with him, and they had all these adventures or whatever, and we're like, oh, we've never heard about or seen this person before. It is, I guess it can be a challenge if you're trying to write new characters into the, but it just was, and I feel like the performance honestly is pretty bad and over the top. And I think a lot of the writing of her backstory was like cliche. And with the, I mean, I, yeah, this character, I, think is a real good example of a lot of the flops of the show. Yeah, Ryan, great still you picked too. She's really... well,
this is my favorite part too. In the last episode, when Sung has booby trapped his lab with a recording of his voice, and then has set drones to launch to stop the Europa probe, the Europa mission, at a certain period of time, which are also booby trapped. They're hardwired to explode if anyone tampers with them, and until Rios takes control of them and makes them slam into each other. None of that had any relevance, and then the computer says all drones terminated. Well, you know, that's coding here. Let's see. If
that's like a Channel 101 thing that,
yeah,
I think we the computer just says problem solved.
I know.
Again, the cheapest way out. Off screen, the problem was solved.
Oh, so bad. Now, here we go. Now, this is the core. Now, there are so many plots to season two of Picard. I defy you to find the one that makes sense. This is the one where we go back in time and Picard's mother hung herself in the greenhouse with all the weird, like, Black Panther shadow puppets here in the background. But she was also seen in, what was it, Where No Man's Gone Before or Where No One's Gone Before? That, remember that episode where he's
very old? Yes.
Oh, yeah. They wrote a line there's a line. I don't know if George, I don't know if it's in the final episode where basically Patrick Stewart, I won't even call him Picard, says, I used to imagine that my mom got old and I would have fantasies about my old mother. So basically saying that flashback
was
fake. Did you hear that line, Mike? Or was that the episode?
I did not hear that line. I probably skipped over it. I'm very sure I skipped over it.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Right? At that point in time, it's like, because no one had bothered to flag that for people. It's like, oh, we'll cover that with a line. You're going to cover that up? Oh, okay. I mean, like, I guess then nothing before that mattered. This is
another great example of like rewriting a character's backstory that has a rich backstory that a lot of people saw. Like, why?
Yeah.
Why do that? Like, why? You know, you have material. Like, you don't need to invent some new dumb thing. Like,
well, you know, yeah. And like his mother's there, and then his brother, Renee, or I can't remember his name was. I thought it was Renee, wasn't it? But
and he fights
I think
with
the nephew was Renee, the nephew that
right,
dies.
The nephew, yeah, but like his brother isn't anywhere to be seen. It's like, no, he's off at boarding school now. It's like you're saying, George, why waste that opportunity to have like a pissy older brother giving you shit the whole season? No, he's off at a boarding school. But here's his mother who's going to hang herself. So remember that? No, I don't actually. I remember her having tea with him. So
you've created a new character. They just created a new character in Picard named Patrick Stewart.
This is like the biggest gaslighting series, isn't it? It's like,
I told George that I think that episode where she's running around the castle and like he's in the shrink's office is one of the worst things I've ever seen.
I
was experiencing something new watching it. It wasn't total boredom. I felt like a zombie watching. Like, what's going on? I wasn't like, I don't know. But yeah,
it's amazing how bad Star Trek can be. It is really bad. When it's bad, it's really, really bad.
This Star Trek was built on episodic television because if it's a bad episode, it's gone, right? We don't have to worry about that anymore. But they have doubled down so hard. And no, this is one big episode. It's 10 episodes long. And we're going to have to live in this. We're hanging our star on this, baby. This, you know.
That's us. That's the audience watching the show.
we are all looking for a long piece of rope and a beautiful, like, why would you do it in the greenhouse? It's like, oh, I hope my son sees this.
Because it's symbolic to her son and she wants him to be scarred.
Yes.
Well, because the right, like it's just, yeah.
You're going to be such a great captain someday because of this, honey. Oh, I love you so much. All right. Now let's bop on over here to Rene Picard. This character who was so important wearing this polo with look like a little iron on, right? It's like, well, we ran out of budget. So There's our iron on. This is another like central casting plant right here, right? This was in like a Paramount Studios office, right? This plant here is like, can we borrow this? We are so off. This character, tell me why we have to watch this character. Tell me what her significance is.
I don't know.
She is so useless. And then she has fears. And then Picard tells her some sort of banana story about like, you have to look into the darkness or something. And she's like, yep, I am totally good. And then Q has to kill Picard by getting Sung to run him over with a Tesla. And
I didn't follow any of this stuff. I felt like a zombie watching it.
Again, this should have been another central thing. It's like, hey, this is first contact, right? If this mission doesn't get to Europa, then all is lost. If Cochrane doesn't, invent warp drive technology, then Earth is lost. So it should hang all on this, right? I keep on using the phrase hang when, I guess this is what it is. But this became like a nothing. All right, here's another shot here of Dr. Sung and what is her name now? It doesn't
Corey,
matter, right?
Corey is the...
Right, Corey, okay.
Her character in this season.
Because she was twins in the first one. Sanji
Data's was... Data's daughter, right? I don't even remember how that was Data's daughter. It totally flew out of my head.
Yeah, He made her, right? It was like, Lal, hey, that's another example of the same thing we're talking about. I remember talking to my sister about that because she tolerated some of Picard season one. And it was like, what about Lal? Like, Lal was just like, it was like Lal too. Like, they took the idea, but they pretended that didn't happen. You know?
Like, that didn't end horribly for him, where he built this child right. And it died. And it was like all off screen. It's like, Jesus, this is so dark. Your kid has died. And it's like, I'll just build another one. And then here's Sung. And this is 2024, you guys. Get ready, because in 2 years, we're going to have drones with force screens. I mean, we're less than like 18 months away. I hope you're ready. This is exciting. And Goop Kids, this kid, like he like grew this kid, right? Like,
there's something about Sung in this instance that reminds me of the same way I said, like, Picard is just become Patrick Stewart, where it's just kind of become Brent Spiner. Like, even what he's wearing is like, I feel like they get to decide. They're like, this is just what I wear. I like hats like this. Like, I feel like these guys are in a position where they can just be like, what's comfortable? What do I look good in? Because, they all hated wearing Starfleet uniform costumes and stuff like that. And like, but it's like, but that stuff, so, like, the costumes matter. Like, you can't just wear a polo shirt that you would have worn to set that day. You can't. Yep. Like, it's stupid. It's science fiction. Like, come on.
They forced him into the outfit like for season one, because that had to, because we needed to see that. And then he's like, I'm not going to do that again. And they're like, oh, no, don't worry, Brent. You're going to be playing a descendant who looks just like every other iteration of you. Super cool. And you're going to wear whatever you want. You can walk.
We've joked so many times about how funny it is to see them when they get shoehorned back into their costumes. And the last time, we've talked about this a lot, William Shatner appeared in the opening of the Oscars monologue the year your friend who does fake Star Trek show. Yes, that fake Star Trek TNG show.
Yeah.
So that was William Shatner in the costume. They got him to put the costume on. It's kind of amazing. Like, you like seeing, as silly as they do look and as ridiculous it is part of like, well, if you're going to get the actor, like, put him in some variation that works for their age, but please don't have them wear the clothes they showed up in or their preferred outfits.
That was the last time that Shatner appeared as Captain Kirk, right?
Yes.
And I bet it will be the last time.
Isn't it amazing that with all of these various Star Trek incarnations that have happened in the last 20 years, that William Shatner is still kicking around and they will not use him in anything?
They refuse, and they will not pay him what, because if you pay him like $3 million, you're like, yeah, I'll do anything. He doesn't care.
Oh, I think it's a testament to how difficult he is. I just think none of them want anything to do with him, that they're like, it's not worth the trouble. Because imagine the trouble. I'm sure Patrick Stewart puts you through hell in his own way. He's a diva. And he, and I'm sure Brent Spiner does, and I'm sure some of the reasons these shows are bad is because of the things they insist on, like what they wear or how the script, like, and there's no questions Shatner would be by far the most difficult of anybody.
But like Paramount Plus wouldn't care. Like if they're launching a new streaming service, it would be like how much to get Captain Kirk back in the suit. But like none of these showrunners, I bet, were like, this isn't your father's Star Trek, man. We got a whole new spin on that no one's going to like, you know? It's like, oh, okay.
That's exactly what those guys, yes, that's exactly what they've been doing this entire time with every movie, every show.
Well, I said like in the last podcast, like with the way they pitched Strange New Worlds was, I think it was Akiva Goldsman who also wrote this, which is the most baffling thing. That is the proof of alternate universe.
Well, wrote is loosely defined these days. Who knows?
Yeah, but somehow from him came two very divergent things. But I guess the pitch was we want to do something radical with Star Trek and do it the way they used to do it.
Yeah, crazy. Hey guys, I got a crazy idea. We've tried a lot of stuff. Let's just do it the way it was done when it was very successful. Let's try that. Let's just see what happens. It's a crazy idea.
I don't want to stop too hard here, guys, but that worked. I know, but I want to go back to that.
It's risky. It's risky for sure, but yeah, it is the format that built the franchise.
can we blast through a lot of plot and have like 10 episodes serialized? No, that's still not the way it is. Oh boy, because we got to keep.
I think that there must be some dynamic between writer. There are a lot of big names on these things. Plus, these are powerful multi. Conglomerate whatevers plus like major stars who demand things, so I bet it's hard to get anything done like in any way. And I'm sure that like the reason you say it's two completely divergent things with his name on it, I'm sure it's just the forces at work with one were completely different than the forces in the other.
Well, especially with, because you had Siobhan working on this one for the first season. And then like, as I was hearing Akiva talking, he says, well, yeah, the second season's like me and this other showrunner. And then the third season's really her. And then then it's like, they don't talk about Michael Chabon at all. So like, I guess he's, hey, good job. Why don't you, you know, let's give you a development deal and you're over there. You know?
Executive producers like that just make a ton of money and don't necessarily write much. You never know. We don't know. We don't know what they do. Who does what?
There's like 23 executive producers. If you count in the beginning of the opening credits of Discovery, it is 23. It is insane.
That's why you have no money left over for sets in space. That's what happens.
That is very true. That's what they, you know what they do for FX? So this is like, they get like a producer's pool of money. That's what they do. Like, this is how much money we have to spend. You guys figure it out. And so then all the producers have to fight over it. It's great. Well, like, what a great blood sport. It's like it's like, okay, we have $3 million, you know, for the season for producer. Here, you guys figure it out. What a wonderful, like piranha rats consuming themselves kind of thing. I love that. I love this too. This is Sung with his diabolical plan to poison. Now he to poison Rene Picard with a dermal patch filled with neurotoxins that he touches her face with, because he knew this was all going to happen because it was not a clean room as they're getting ready to go off to Europa. Everyone can just kind of walk around and talk to each other and touch each other. Then he peels off his hand. He peels it off with his fingers, and he seems to be okay with that. So I want you guys to play devil's advocate and tell me how that works. Tell me any part of that that you can validate.
I just thought it was weird as somebody who does a lot of stuff with space missions and stuff nowadays that she was like not in the rocket like an hour before the launch. They were just like
like an hour before, right?
Yeah, I mean, I know astronauts are like in the rockets like hours before, like sometimes like half a day, and I guess in a couple of years we'll have figured it out that you don't need to do that. You just step in a few minutes. before the
like
launch,
a car.
And then they send it off.
Yeah. It reminds me, remember Gattaca? That was the one thing that bothered me about Gattaca, because like Ethan Hawke just like walked straight into the rocket. Like,
oh, yeah. And he's like wearing a suit, right?
Yeah. He's like wearing a suit, and he's like, oh, you should pee with your left hand. And then like he walks in the suit or into the doors closed. They launched the Saturn. Good job. Yeah. I hope you like hope you like Saturn. This was so baffling because the security to get into that gala, like required like triple identification that was all hard coded.
Yeah.
And then like, he just walks in with like this dermal thing in his hand. And then like the tall Shi'ar girl just like beams in and takes over. And it's wearing like, where was that other astronaut? The one that she took the outfit for. You know what I'm talking about? Like so
you're asking questions I can't answer.
All right, all right, let's not worry about that. All right, so here she is. Her name is what is it? It's Talani. Hold on.
Tahini.
So this is a Gary 7. I was so happy when like that big vault door opened and the smoke, and then they came out. I was like, oh, the Gary 7s are back. It's so cool.
They did that for you. And only you.
Well, I hated that episode. I hated Simon Earth. I thought that was the worst. Robert Lansing and Terry Garr. And, you know, it's like, hey, Leeds, take a back seat. But then it's like, oh, we're going to call that back. And then she looks just like, I thought she was that girl. But no, I know I look just like her. I'm actually a Romulan. Like she moves her, like she brushes her ear, and then like her Romulan ear comes out. And well, we have these, why don't you just get the surgery? What the hell? You're on Earth for 20 years and you've got a little holodeck on your...
I don't understand. So is she the same person as Laris, or was that a...
No, because Laris is alive in the future. She's like, it's totally coincidental, I guess.
That they look exactly the same.
But she's Romulan. Oh. But she's not Laris. She's just somebody else.
This is just sad. That's just sad.
And there she is dying because now she's got the ear, and she's got the red eyes.
Yeah.
No cure. Remember when Picard got injured and they didn't beam him onto like the spaceship with all the cool stuff, and they took him into that urgent care.
Yeah, sort of.
And like no, this is no. The ship's computers can't treat him. We need a doctor. We need a doctor from the 21st century to handle this robot. This robot Picard. This is everything we need to do.
Yeah. Why is he a robot? I don't understand. What was the point of that?
Ryan?
I mean, was it really just to get rid of whatever disease he had? Because they could have just not addressed that disease and
which they never mentioned. Did you notice they never mentioned it?
Yeah, I read something about that the people think that they might have had to pay the writer.
That's it. That's
some royalties for that.
Under WJ, if it's something you create in that episode, then you know, like that. That's why Tom Paris was not. What was his name?
Locarno.
Yeah. I'm Tom Paris. Oh yeah, you got it. Man. Yeah. I was washed out from the Academy after doing something around Jupiter. Was there another guy? No. But I will be on Picard with that guy as well. We're both going to be on. It's totally fine. So yeah, so she died to clear the way, but he's in love with her. He like, which then transfers to Laris. It's like a one for one. We're all okay with that, right? We're all okay that you fall in love with like your twin sister and that's fine. So
no, I'm not okay with it.
Oh. Are you okay with this, George?
Oh, I don't think George saw this because he didn't see the last episode. Oh,
this is a big reveal for me.
It's fine.
This is the best part.
All right. So, is he the traveler now? Is that what happens?
He is the traveler who is also in charge of the Gary Sevens. The travelers are for some reason they're called the Watchers, who are also the Gary Sevens. So. He's in charge. So when that girl dies and he does nothing to save her, when the Romulan girl who looks like Laris dies, he beams in to this like goop girl, this like cloned weirdo girl, and says, hey, I'm Wesley. I'm a traveler. I'm a Gary Seven. Do you want to join us?
That's talking about Channel 101. That would be a great line of dialogue. Hey, so I'm Wesley. I'm a traveler. I'm a Gary Seven. Join us. I just love that line of dialogue. And now I never want to watch it because I just want to picture him like, hey, I'm a potpourri of references to things within the history, the 50-year history of this series that don't matter and don't connect. But hey, I'm here. I'm a cameo. Aren't you happy, fans?
This was such a, were you telling me, Ryan, that you thought there was like a buyout for him doing all those?
Yeah. Those, I mean, I've only seen him do like the after show and host stuff that I thought my first reaction when he walked out, and he's not wearing a futuristic uniform or something. I thought he was like hosting something, or it was like he was going to invite her onto the after show or something, because he hosts the after show of Picard, right? I mean, I don't watch it.
This is making me sad. Like you mentioned, I've gotten past worrying about what they're wearing, but look at what he's wearing. That's awful. Is he just wearing a t-shirt and like a jacket?
What if he was like in a sound stage on Paramount lot, like getting ready to do the after show, and like the actor who was going to be like this Gary Seven dude dropped out, and we're like, shit, like, what are we going to do? And they grabbed him. They just roll him over here. Like, this is like the Paramount backlot right here, right? Like, this is like, who cares? This is like, yeah, all right. And they're like, yeah, you know, just say this. We'll put the cue cards behind you. And yeah, just wing it. We got it.
We'll never screw this. It does feel like this scene was, it just came out of nowhere because she was like standing. I think a while back when they, it was like halfway through the season, they showed that, teaser for next season with the whole cast, and a lot of people were saying, where's Wesley? Do you think that they just shot this like in the last 2 months?
Probably.
To sort of put him in there? I don't know.
Placate the Wesley fans?
Yeah. All the Wesley fans. This character has no purpose in this show. This Issa Briones character, she like you could have just had Dr. Sung saying, I'm trying to make people or whatever it was. And we didn't need that. Like, oh, my daughter, my fake daughter who dies in sunlight, unless I have like drones construct like a shield with new technology, like none of this works. So then she escapes because Q gives her a cure. Q gives her a cure in a little blue vial. You're looking for this, you know, and then so she goes running around, and then she just goes with the trap. There's none of this makes sense. This is just everything.
It sounds like a horrible congealment of various unrelated threads from the show.
Did Q have to double check with like the travelers, or the travelers waiting for her to get cured by Q? It's like, let's see how this plays out. Go, get her. We need her. We so need her. She's going to travel around the universe. She's going to travel through big vault doors. This is so great.
I'm remembering Wesley's goodbye episode from The Next Generation. The one where it was like the Native American one.
Oh boy.
Right. And then it turns out to, that was also kind of out of nowhere. Right.
That was a little cringy.
About one thing. And then the traveler comes, it was about like a Native American settlement on a planet, and they were, you know, the Federation had to clear it out, right? And then
the Cardassians, like, they're like, this is part of the treaty.
And then Wesley was trying to, you know, stand up for the Native settlers, and then one of them turned out to be the traveler.
I know.
And took him on.
I thought you were talking about Wesley's goodbye when he goes to Starfleet, which is a great episode because
that's a good one. I'm talking about
that should have been the last time where he became
attractive. Yeah, no one needed to see that paid off. You know, it's like ham music, Picard. You understand? This boy is gifted. And then he stops time. Remember when they're having the big phaser fight? He stops time and is like, "What's going on?" And then that Native American turns into like the weirdo dude. I wonder if that guy's still alive.
You think Eric Menyuk?
What's that?
His name is Eric Menyuk, I think.
Oh, is he still alive?
I think he is, because I've seen some of these convention like Facebook groups, and he actually posts stuff in there. The actor. The actual guy.
Makes sense.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Eric is listening and watching.
Yeah. Eric, if you're listening, go ahead and log on and just, you know.
Shoot us a question.
All right, let's see. Okay, so this maybe is like the only part that's moderately redeeming is John DeLancey has some degree of dignity in this season and a tiny bit of gravitas. Even though none of it makes sense, it's all his storyline is completely bananas. I'm going to transport you to the past and ruin the future so that you can learn to fall in love again with a Romulan girl whose husband maybe I killed. I mean, he died kind of suddenly, right? He was like, oh, I'm sorry your husband died off camera, but kind of.
Yeah, okay. I'm glad I wasn't. I remember at the pilot, he's dead. And I was like, did I just skip over something or did that just, yeah.
Okay. It was such an off, like such a throwaway line. It's like, well, after he died, I know it was difficult. No, I'm fine. But what about you, Jean-Luc? Like,
so bad.
Yeah.
So bad. This show is so, so bad. It just needs to be said clearly and loudly. Like,
George,
it's a
terrible
TV show.
You need to accept you. Look at that. That is so prophetic. You accepted you. Or maybe Q accepted.
Isn't it amazing how much, like, money can be spent on something that feels just so bad? Like so poorly done? Isn't that incredible? Just an amazing feat that so many people could be paid so much to do something that is and probably get jobs again. I mean, I hope they do. I wish them the best. Like, I don't want people not to get jobs, but my God, like, where can you fail like at this level? And, you know, I probably shouldn't be saying all this, but it's just true. It's just amazing. It's miraculous almost.
Again, like with Paramount Plus, there should be an infinite amount of money to make this work, right? I mean, you've got Patrick Stewart back after 30 years. Like, how can you run out of money and why, like, how can you not throw money and resources at this to make this the best it possibly could be?
Make sure that the scripts aren't, like, awful.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's, like, when I think about what, like, Disney's done with Star Wars, there's plenty not to like. There's plenty that's just completely flat and, like, uninspiring or uninteresting. But most of it stays away from being like this level of just kind of like nonsense. There's some of it that felt like nonsense to me, but most of it is not like impossible to figure out what the plots are. You know, like basic stuff that yeah. You're just like Book of Boba Fett. It's like, yeah, you know, you could take it or leave it. Like, I have did not think all that highly of it, but like, it's,
yeah, Book of Boba Fett is one of those ones that I thought was really bad, and then this show came on right after, and we watched it, and I said, oh, no, Book of Boba Fett's actually pretty good.
It's just, it's totally competent. It's just
season
like, it can
walk. Of Game of right. Thrones was a masterpiece compared
yeah,
to
right.
the card.
Things that you were like, I don't, it's like a difference between, I don't love that versus, like, what am I looking at here? Like, what are you doing?
Well,
like, does the ship have a rudder? Did you know, like, you know, how do you put this out in the world as a group, as a company, and be like, yep, it's done. It's finished. Like, it's just like amazing to me.
If those shows, at least like this plot is incomprehensible, nonstop, and then there's no budget behind it. I mean, at least first season was like, we're going to throw a shit ton of money at this. We're going to go to different planets every single week. We're going to blast through our budgets. You know, same thing with Book of Boba Fett. All this stuff's all great. This one had no plot, no budget, or too much plot, and then no budget. And so you get stuff like weird cop chases and then like a weird interrogation scene with a guy who was like, I'm a CIA agent and I saw Vulcans when I was a kid.
You may have just stumbled into part of what it was, though, which I think they tried to replace. I suspect that with all the forces involved and all the powerful voices demanding things, they may have tried to replace spectacle with like, hey, let's reference this and call back that and twist in this way and turn in that way. And that'll keep it moving and like keep people thinking. And I just think it turned into like a knot of wires that couldn't be untangled. But like, it feels like maybe they thought that that would replace the energy. I don't know. I'm just trying to come up with an idea. I have no idea. I don't want to make excuses.
No, no, I like it. We've got to figure this out here. This is, I mean, look at this. What happened? They show up in 2024 and they say, don't touch anything. Don't do anything. We could screw up the timeline. I'm staying. Rio's like, no, nope. You know what? I feel good about this. This is where I belong.
Actually, I told George that My favorite part of the last two episodes were the clear writing off of all of these characters. where one by one, they're just like, no, I think this is the end of the road for me. Jurati, and they couldn't get rid of Raffi and the elf ninja guy. But Rios, they got rid of.
Issa Brioni, she's gone.
Yeah, she's gone. Yeah.
Corey or whatever.
No, because
this guy had nothing to offer. Yeah. Let's be honest. He was easy to axe.
Yeah, he flew a ship and they didn't have a ship. So that was a lot of soul searching on that.
And in season one, the parts when they revealed that he had like five like poorly portrayed accents versions of himself, and scenes where there were like six of him interacting, I was like, just kill me. Like, I can't watch this. This is horrible.
Computer, reduce acting by 40%.
Yeah. It was like being in one of your least favorite acting classes in your life.
Yes.
Watching those, like, oi, I'm the Irish version of myself. Like, it was just like, stop.
I'm doing a one-man show. I want you guys all to come. It's really great. I'm playing all the characters. It's going to be so good. Yeah. Oh, I'm out of town.
I feel bad for the guy. They really they hung him out to dry.
They did. Like they like, how much fun, like, you're gonna play all these great characters and they're like, this is not working. Okay, you're playing one character and now you're gonna go away. You're gonna fall in love with these people after you've been with them for like 20 minutes. Like, this is your life now, this kid, this woman. Yeah, this was just. And probably like the same wardrobe too. Everyone's just kind of on the same palette, right?
Boring, visually uninspired.
It's like he found one of like the traveler's coats, right? Because this is what Wesley was sort of wearing. This is like, maybe he's a traveler too. But, oh, this fits. And so is she. Yeah. Like, they've all got these little jacket dealies. This is all.
Yeah.
All right, here, this this is the most affection we have in the entire show. This is where John Delancey. Where Patrick Stewart like is like, I have been doing 10 episodes. I'm weak, John. I can't stand. Can I pretend to hug you and you just like physically hold me? He said that in the last two episodes, the smoke machines were causing his voice to get like really, really reedy and trebly. But like, he's like, oh, that's good because it'll make me sound more emotional. And
Patrick Stewart said that?
He said this, that, yeah. Patrick Stewart
for real?
Said
that. Oh, wow. That's sad, because you can tell throughout both shows that he's lost any authority in his voice.
Yeah.
And he's calling it out because he's aware. He's making excuses. I was going to say, one of the things that's weird is seeing John Delancey like have more presence on screen than him, because that was certainly never true before. But John Delancey's just a younger man who's still capable of stepping on screen and having presence. And it's sad, but Patrick Stewart just isn't really.
Look, this is a great, this is, again, I think he's the person who availed himself the best. He like stepped as, he, cause you're right, George, like back in the day, it was like a great, like British acting versus American acting. Let's see what you got. And like, they're both holding their own. And in this one, he's literally kind of propping Patrick Stewart up a little bit. He's like, I got you, buddy. You know, you carried me through a couple of scenes back in the day.
I'm going to try to save your show. I think Patrick Stewart's last performance really was Logan, which I loved that movie. I think he kind of like, it was what he could do was he could play a man who was truly like, almost dead. Like, and it was very painful but beautiful in a way, the way he did it. But he was capable of like on screen. Now, he may be extremely healthy and like vibrant in real life, but like what translates on screen is just that he's not like energetic and lively anymore. And it's hard because you're away, you know, you have, let's table this conversation for until we see Indiana Jones 5, and then we'll talk, we'll circle back to this discussion.
Oh, back to Harrison Ford, see what we get out of that. Yeah,
and how he's holding up at the, it's just crazy to put like someone, I think that age, the, yeah, that's a whole tangent, but I,
that, we'll, like, we'll get to the, yeah, I that's something. I will say he was probably like a B or a B minus in the last thing I saw him in, not to spoil anything, but George, maybe you saw it, where he made a cameo. recently?
Who?
Harrison Ford?
Harrison
Ford? No, Patrick Stewart.
Patrick Stewart. I didn't see it. I've heard though. About that.
Okay.
I'm aware that he's cameoed again as his other iconic figure. I'm spoiling it now. I'd heard about that. Yeah. And he said something like, there's a quote with him where he was like, I'm not done playing that character. He's like, no, I think you are.
I think
you're done.
I think he gave it all he got there and he's good with that. So
yeah.
The thing that bothers me so much, I've watched this clip a couple of times, is John Delancey has these weird, I don't know if you guys can see this, he has these stains here on this jacket.
Do you think that's from a prior take where Picard's makeup got on his shoulder?
Maybe. That's probably, yeah, because I was watching and Raffi grabs his throat. He's like, you could almost kill me if maybe. I was like, what are we doing here? Raffi's going to kill Q. First of all, the whole death of Q is so stupid. It just angers me to no end. There's no... But I bet you like they had him do it on this side. His head rested here. That's a good thing. This is all of his forehead.
Like, yeah, to keep the gloss, the sheen off.
Yeah. And then they're like, foundation. Actually, it's better if we shoot from this side. Because I bet you they rehearsed it on this side. Yeah, and then like, no.
That's Picard's makeup on his shoulder.
And then you got the
costume. It's his tears.
It's just
or mucus. Because sometimes when you cry a lot. The mucus comes out.
It's that dermal layer from Dr. Sung. It's like he's gonna peel it off. Like, oh, I wish he would have cried over here. I could have killed him. So this was like when he said, see you out there, that was okay. I'm like, okay, that's fine. That's okay. And then go back to the 20th century.
I didn't know what this is. This is terrible.
Well, you haven't seen this, have you, George?
Oh no.
Oh, we're running in the shadows of the night. Remember that? Like in episode 6 that Jonathan Frakes directed?
Oh.
And George from film school thinks that the music is non-diegetic, right? Like you're thinking, this is part of the soundtrack. And you're like, oh, they're just playing this as like kind of like a mid of the episode, like kind of soundtrack. And then Alison Pill walks out in this blackout onto this balcony and starts singing, we're running with the shad, as part Jurati, part Borg Queen. And you're like, what the fuck is going on in this show? George, this is the end of it. This is what you get. This is the shadows.
This does not make me happy.
Ryan, what'd you think
of looking at?
I don't know.
Have I sapped all the energy from you? Is this
she the Borg Queen? Is that what this is? What is that? What I'm seeing right here?
Yes.
I mean, I know the whole thing. I was so bored of the show the whole time. I think at this point, I mean, I might have been at least awake watching it, like things going in. I wouldn't say I liked it, but I mean, something was happening. Maybe it's because they were back on a ship in space. Yeah.
But they flash back. So like all of that, I guess, didn't matter. And they're like right back in the moment. And so the Borg Queen is there and she reveals herself. And so I'm going to ruin it for you, George. Her whole plan is that she and the Borg Queen became one. And for 400 years, she'd been waiting because there's this anomaly that only with the help of Federation ships can they help to close it using their shields. So she calls for Picard, knowing that he's the only person who will trust her enough to let her take control of all the ships at the same time. Also, Seven's there, incidentally, so who cares? And so that's the whole reason why she's there and that they're calling for Picard. That is the reason. Good reason, right? Couldn't get like another Borg ship or go like, I don't know, I mean, do anything? Like prepare for 400 years for this incursion. I mean,
just kind of amazed that they tried to combine all that. They were like, it's not enough to just do Q. It's not enough to just do the time warp thing. It's not enough to just do Sung. It's not enough to just do the Borg Queen. It's certainly not enough when you do it this way.
And Picard's dead mother and
right. It's
ICE
just
agents. And
yeah, it's just diarrhea. It's Star Trek diarrhea.
Oh, and then
that's sad.
Well, you can't see this, but it's let me see.
Does not look well.
It's so they launch Renee. It's also to save Renee, Auntie Renee. And you are thinking, oh, well, she's going off to Europa. We're going to figure out what she does. And then we don't see anything about her. Instead, Guinan, George, Guinan at the end tells us what she does. We don't see that. She discovered something during the Europa mission that helps save the oceans and everything else. But we're not going to see that. And Rios helps with that too. Rios's son.
So they must have just had to write something and they didn't shoot it that obviously because they didn't know they were going to do that is what it sounds like.
I guess.
Yeah. What a mess.
We go back to we forgot to talk about the magic genie bottle that Guinan has. Did you see that, George? We didn't talk. Did either of you guys see that or no?
I don't remember that.
Okay. So yeah, Guinan, in order to call, like, so the Elalorians.
The young, fit Guinan with the sleeveless.
She's somehow incredible. Like, even more fit than what she was, like, back in, like, the 1900s with, like, Mark Twain. Madam Guinan, I will tell you.
Times era.
Pull-ups will help you in 100 years. They're like, we have to talk to Q. And so she pulls out this bottle from her bar, and she's like, okay. The Elalorians and the Q have this truce, right? Because why? And the only way to summon them is to open up this bottle and pour a drink, and this will summon the Q. And so she does it. So she opens up and she pours it, and she's like, and then like everything shakes, and then no Q shows up. Instead, an FBI agent shows up and arrests them, which is like, then why did we do that? Why create that ridiculous backstory? Was that in 10 forward on the D, on the Enterprise D? Did she have that all points in time? Like, Q, we're in big trouble. Come save us, you know? Anyway, and here's our, I was going to like this guy. He's out of the show. He's not in the next season. I don't know about these two. They might be.
Seven. I'm sure Jerry Ryan will pop up.
Yeah.
It seems like a given with anything they do at this point. But yeah, let's hope they're done with the other ones.
Don't you guys want to know what happens to the relationship?
You know, the weird thing, they teased that at the end of season one, and then season two starts and there's no, like, don't address that. And I thought, oh, I guess they decided to go in a different direction. And then they did the exact same thing this season, where it's like there's no relationship the whole season. I mean, I guess they're walking around together, but, and then they kiss at the end.
They kiss at the end. They're the only ones who, well, maybe Rios kisses that girl. I don't know. But like, yeah, it's, you're right. Like they had like this throwaway thing where like the two of them are like holding hands at the very last scene in season one.
Yeah.
Where they're like, oh, we just decided to come up with that. Seemed like a cool idea. Like the two actresses, like, oh, okay.
Good on you. I wasn't even paying that close attention in season one. I don't even know if they had a scene together.
Those two. I think I 100% think that it's a fan service thing.
No, but
fans started spinning wheels about like, oh, there's a relationship there. Wouldn't that be a thing? And I guarantee you they were like, well, we're not going to write that. But like, hey, they thought this and let's throw them a bone.
But like at the end of the season, when they're on the ship, the two of them are holding hands. Like they are like, and the, like Jerry Ryan's like, oh, we just decided to do that. We thought that'd be kind of cool. It's like, wow, that's great. Glad you guys came up with that huge plot development. And then like they totally dropped it in the beginning of the season and they rebuilt it. So
I think my biggest criticism of season, well, I mean, I had a lot of criticisms, but season one, I thought all of the relationships were weird. It was written by, romance has always been weird in Star Trek. It always makes you a little uncomfortable, like when characters like kiss or something in Star Trek.
Yeah.
Like, you know, yes. Han Solo and Leia kissing doesn't feel weird. But like whenever it happened, like Odo and Kira, that's like, ooh, it's weird.
You can tell it's written by people who are comfortable with it.
Exactly. Like,
how does this work exactly?
So that's
they're really in the zone. They're in their wheelhouse when they're writing the one about, well, he fell in love with a video game character. And that works because you can feel that one because you write what you know.
And so that's what all of the because didn't Rios and Girardi, didn't they have like a thing?
Yeah, they were a whole thing, and it's like, oh, that fell apart too. Oh, yeah, I can't. You know,
I really do think there's something to the awkwardness, though, of just like, aren't people just suddenly together, right, guys? It's like, yeah, no, sure. That's always how it goes. It's just one day it's happening, one day it's not.
There's some processing part in them, like where it's like, I don't understand that middle step. I can't get past.
I've never seen it.
I just see those two people together, like at a party or something, and then the next thing they're together. So I don't get that. So that just happens, right? It's like off screen something happens, and then
it's official, and I don't know how this works. I'm not. Yes, that's exactly how they write Star Trek.
Oh God, well that's how they're doing it. All right, well let's wrap this up. This has been phenomenal. I've been so happy. This is my the best of everything for me, especially since we all have gaps in our memory about this show, so that we can fill each other in on this stuff. What are we looking forward to in season 3 of Picard?
Well, I saw that teaser and I mean, this whole time. Okay, now I'll say what my big issue with Picard is and why I think it's a systemic problem and the show will never be good, no matter what they do. They could have like the best writer ever and it still wouldn't be good. And it's because they seem to think that like this character of Jean-Luc Picard is a real guy. Like, you know, in real life, people have, you know, communities that they drift, you know, your friends change, you get older, you lose touch with people. And it seems to be like they thought they could make this show about Picard when he's older and you don't have to include the cast of the Next Generation, you know, because that's how real people are. You know, you could tell a story about somebody later, but I think that when you watch it, you're always like yearning to see those characters from the Next Generation, because that's what Picard is. I mean, he was a character created for that TV show. And I think I told George, like early on in the second season, it would be like looking at like a scene from my future, like a TV show of my future. And like, I'm at a table talking with a bunch of people that I've never met. And like my wife isn't there. You know, you guys aren't there. I'm just talking to a bunch of other people. And occasionally like, oh, maybe George stops in and waves. And I was just, oh, hey, how you doing, George? And then I just keep going on having my conversation with these total strangers. And I feel like Picard needs to be with those other characters. Like there's that scene where he's like giving his last speech at Starfleet Academy. And like Raffi is there, and I was like, well, what, like Geordi couldn't just like stop by, or Worf. Like, it's just like, it's not, that's what the character is. And you can't create some other story.
I have a couple things to piggyback onto that I think dovetail very well with it. And also connect to Strange New Worlds. What I think part of it is like, and I know this is like Star Trek, a little bit of like BTS that probably everybody knows, but like when they wrote The Next Generation originally, it was fused Roddenberry's idea with what the motion picture was. It was going to, he had like kind of like two circling things. It was like, it's just Kirk older. And his next guy is Riker, who became Decker. And there's Troy, who became Uhlea. Like all these things, it was obviously two kind of things, like the same idea split. And I've heard the way Roddenberry and other people talk about Picard is that he's Kirk. He's older Kirk. Like the original series Kirk. In a lot of ways, like as different as the character became and Patrick Stewart made him, etc. My point is just like Star Trek is about a group of people going on adventures episode after episode who function sort of like a family or like one being. They are separate parts of one whole. Like Kirk, Spock, and McCoy were like one thing. And like Picard is one thing in this crew. So when you pull one out and you say like, what happens to the one when is like his life, it's like, it's not the guy, because the guy was the head of a body. It's kind of like what if the show's just about, what if a human was just a head and it had no neck and it had no arms? And you'd be like, well, then that would be weird and not work right. Like, and that's what it feels like to me, is like when I watch Strange New Worlds, they make these references in the pilot to like Kirk's brother, and you get the sense they've cast some guy to play Kirk that's young. And it's like, that to me, that's stupid, because the Pike character is Kirk, because the Pike character is Picard, because it's just a new actor playing the captain of the ship that goes from planet to planet and has adventures. That's what Star Trek is. It's not like, it's not those timelines and those interweavings and those, it's a reset each time with the same basic principle. And I think that that's why this show is just total failure of Star Trek. It's like, it's not, that's not Picard. Picard to me is currently this, Pike is a variant, like on the Picard theme. To me, that's what it is. And if they do season three, what I'm excited about is when they do bring all the pieces back.
Yeah.
Like I said earlier in this episode, even though they were making pizza, when Troy, Riker, and Picard sat at a table and talked about solving a problem, was the closest the show ever was to Star Trek to me. Even though it was just like, oh, those three characters solving a problem together. That's Star Trek. That's what it is to me. So maybe we'll get that finally.
They've had two pulls of the slot machine so far and nothing's worked, right? I mean, I like your analogy. I would call it more Star Trek foot. Like, this is, I mean, like, it's like the head at least would be interesting, but this is like, we're getting like a foot, and like, I don't want to look at that. Right.
Yes. That's better. Or it's like Star Trek pinky toenail.
Yeah.
You're like, why?
Remember this? You like this, right? Well, we liked everything of it, but yeah.
We liked it when it was a body. We don't like it dismembered lying on the floor. Like,
why that did things. It's not like, yeah, some sort of museum curio that we have to like examine, you know, and peel apart, like, because like that's the other thing too. It's like we're exhuming the skull of your head, like, as you're saying. It's like, well, I wonder what's behind the eye socket of Picard. I wonder like what his jawbone looks like. I don't want to look at that. I just want the body doing cool stuff, not like getting inside of it and saying, like,
even if they'd done a Picard show where he was the captain again. I thought at one point season one was going this direction with a different crew. I could have maybe been on board, because at least he would have it would be the same thing. There'd be a new Riker and a new whatever, but they didn't really do that. Like, they kind of thought about it for like one episode. It seemed like maybe it was going that way. And then it was like, no, it's not that. And that's not Star Trek to me. So like you said before, it's like that thing of not your dad's or your granddad's Star Trek or whatever, over and over again. It's like, finally, could they try? Like, I'm sure there's going to be plenty of stuff in Strange New Worlds that stinks, because a lot of Star Trek stinks. It always has. But that's why the format works, is because you can stink and still be good, like in the next episode or the next scene or whatever.
We just don't talk about that one. It's like, oh, that was the next one was great. Yeah.
Those are the only ones that George and I talk about.
Yeah, I was going to say, some of us love talking about those ones.
Oh, yeah. Those are the most fun to dig into, right?
Also, I want to mention this, too, before we end. There's a thing with fans, Star Trek fans, that's like this weird, like, we must love all of it. We must accept and love all of it. I don't understand that kind of fandom. I just don't. I can't relate to
like, it. It feels, I mean, in some ways, it almost feels like Russian bots, kind of like flipping stuff, because because the backlash.
Ryan said once to me when we were talking about some tweets we were sharing, they're like, who says this stuff? And he was like, I don't think they're real people. I think they're some kind of bot.
It's like a Paramount bot farm or something. Yeah. Because it's like, well, you know, it's not your Star Trek, but why do you have to shit all over it? It's like, well, because it's bad television. It's just, like, start to finish, it's bad.
It's awful.
Yeah. And I mean, you shouldn't like it either. And I should say, you are fundamentally flawed for liking this. I'm sorry.
Yes, it's like, what's wrong with you, damn it? Like, stop it.
Yeah, it's. I think it is our duty. It's like the first duty is to save people from bad Star Trek, or elevate the bad Star Trek and put it in its place. Right? It's like,
yes, we can appreciate it for what, but this stuff isn't bad Star Trek. This is just bad.
It's just like bad. Right? Yeah. It's not the most toys thing where we'll put it in a little pedestal and say this was a bad episode. Yeah.
Most toys,
bubblegum, you know, like no, it's stuff where it's like, no, this whole season can just go away. We don't ever have to think about it. We just need to erase it from everything.
Well, let's do this again after season three. Let's check in on season three.
Yeah. And let's, if you guys are open for it, if you guys want to talk about Strange New Worlds, like after episode 5 or 6 and like check back in on that, I'm enjoying it. Let's do it.
Yes. I'd like to see what they get right and wrong as they go forward. I think they started off strong, but we'll see.
Yes. They've started off strong a couple of times.
There's already things for us to joke about too. So that's part of why we also have to do this. Ryan to watch it so I can start.
All right, so Ryan to watch it. We'll get. I promise you, it's really good. I can promise you that, and you'd be like, oh no, you're one of them too, Mike. You're a bot. But this is the first time I've actually liked new Star Trek. So,
yeah.
All right, guys, thanks so much. This has been great.
Thank you, Mike.
And for all of you out there, we streamed live. There's 2 people I think who watched it. Start to finish.
Anybody?
Oh,
we know.
No, those poor people.
No, I think we should do more of this, and that we can get people like kind of commenting and kind of like calling us out or agreeing. They should.
Yeah, I'm gonna be prepared with slides next time of things I want to show.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Well, those slides are pretty good, right? Those really, you know.
Yeah, that was fun.
I had to figure out
call outs when you write on them and stuff.
Well, I had to figure out how to get around Paramount's blocking of screenshots because it's like. You have to disable something in Chrome in order to get screenshots because I did first round, they're all black. It was terrible, which was almost okay. I was like, well, hey, remember this? You know, it's just a black screen, but all right, guys. Thank you guys so much. Thank you guys out there. I just want to talk about Star Trek on behalf of George and Ryan. Oh, we do it. Well, we used to do it. I'm Mike McCafferty.
I'm George Edelman.
I'm Ryan Nagata.
And I just want to talk about
Star Trek Picard.
Star Trek Picard.
All right.